You can take my word for it. The 2018 World Cup in Russia will be up to the highest standards. New modern stadiums and facilities will be built in time and to perfection. We are eager to do our best to secure the comfort and safety of our guests. Visa-free entry and free of charge trips between cities to watch football matches. You can get to know Russia, a unique country with a long history and a rich culture. Not bad, not bad at all. Together, let us make sure that football promotes fair play, tolerance, honor.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. My name is Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
But there is a big space next to you, isn't there?
Yeah, where is he?
I'll tell you where he is. He's in the Aegean Sea.
Is he?
Yes.
Hopefully swimming in it rather than.
Well, he's actually on an island in the Aegean Sea, but it's August. People go on holiday in August.
They do, don't they?
Yeah, and I think it's because Bundesliga doesn't come back until next weekend, I think. That's probably what it is. You see, for him, football hasn't started yet. And really, with the fact that Palace lost 3-0 in the opening weekend.
What was the score again?
3-0. Three of your earth goals to
3-0.
Yeah.
That must have been against a top-class side, though, wasn't it?
Well, they were top-class side in the Championship last season.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I'm afraid to say it was a home defeat to Huddersfield.
To Huddersfield,
Yeah, how did Sunderland get on?
Oh, we won.
You won?
Yeah,
well, that's good news.
Unbeaten in three games this season.
Wow, that is really good.
Yeah, it's great.
I told you everything would be fine.
It's fine now. I've forgotten all about the rubbish.
Soon enough, you'll be back in the Premier League, losing at home.
And to Huddersfield.
Yeah, and everything will be great again. Bizarre week in the Premier League, though, wasn't it?
That was crazy. Well, the opening game with Arsenal.
Yeah, that was just ridiculous.
That was mental.
That was utterly ridiculous, yeah. I'd like to say that I really enjoyed that, but I was utterly spent by the end of that game.
I bet you were.
I was completely wasted. I could barely walk. I don't really need stress like that in my life, really.
No.
The air was blue around there for most of the game.
I bet it was. But, well, Arsenal looked really good, but I was really impressed with Leicester, who looked like they used to look, like a real counter-attacking side. And Vardy looked really dangerous, and they were breaking quickly, just like they used to. So it was great to see. You probably didn't enjoy seeing it.
It was good. I mean, I think it shows you the fact all the people who say, oh, well, it must have been Kante. It must have been him. It was the magic ingredient there. And I don't think it was. I think they could not have started last season like the way they finished off the season before. Coming down from the winning of the title. And so seeing them playing well again is really good, especially since they've held on to the majority of their players as well, which is really, really good. I mean, they've made some interesting signings. I think Harry Maguire is going to do really well for them.
He
looked really good. I mean, he set up one of the goals, didn't he? Mm. So, I mean, he looks great. And Iheanacho, the guy they got from Man City.
Yes.
I mean, he's 20 years old. And all right, they spent 25 million on him.
And they didn't even start with him.
No, they didn't. Yeah, and actually, when they brought him on, it all went wrong, didn't it? Yeah. So, what do I know? So we're down a man. So what do we do? What do we need? We need someone who knows something about German football, I suppose, don't we?
That's a big tick, isn't it?
And also, as well, our World Cup coverage kicks off today.
Yeah. How much do we know about that?
And how much do we know about Russia?
Not a great deal.
So we've got to need find someone who knows about Bundesliga and knows about Russia.
Yeah.
Luckily, we found someone.
What?
Yes. I got on the blower and I said, right, find me someone.
Did you ask Jeeves?
No, I didn't. I asked James Appel. Pretty much the same thing. But he put me in touch with a guy called Manu Vett. And Manu Vett, if you listen to the Gegenpressen podcast, who he's a regular on there, but also the Football Grad podcast. So he does two podcasts. He does one about Russian football and does one about German football.
Wow.
And now we've got him on here talking about next summer's World Cup.
Wow, this is going to be great.
Yes. Manu, welcome to The Sound of Football.
Yeah, hi guys, how are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I just want to add, I actually do three podcasts. I have one on Mexican football as well. But that's not the discussion today at all, is it?
Well, we'll have to add that to the credits right at the end, because actually, I'd quite like to listen to that.
Yeah, I think that'd be really interesting. Yeah.
That would be really
it's
good.
All actually part of the same Football Grad network on Acast. So it's called Golazzo, and if you subscribe to it on iTunes, you will get it just like you will get the Gegenpressing and the Football Grad podcast.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we've got now, I think this weekend coming up marks 300 days to the start of the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Is Russia ready?
That's a very good question.
I thought I'd cut off with the big one first.
Yeah, that is the big question. No, I was at the Confederations Cup as part of the Football Grad Network. We actually covered it.
Yeah.
FIFA was kind enough to accredit us for the tournament, which I thought was brilliant because we're not a massive media conglomerate, right?
Yeah.
And to give us that amount of access was really great. And we're expected to get the same for the FIFA tournament next year. But to get to the question, I was at the opening game in St. Petersburg at the Krestovsky Arena, which is, of course, the most controversial of all the stadiums that are being built. And I'm saying being built because it still very much had a wet paint smell when I entered the facility on the first day. And it's a brilliant stadium. It's an absolutely amazing facility. It's one of the best stadiums I've ever been to. It's hands down, I think it's going to be a fabulous arena. And it was a fabulous arena for the opening game. And it was a fabulous place to watch the final as well. So I think in that regard, you know, all the stadiums are going to be fabulous. Kazan was great. The Odkrytie Arena in Moscow, which is, of course, home to Spartak, was a fantastic facility as well. It's a real club facility. And for journalists, it's really wonderful because you're sitting actually right next to the pitch as opposed to, you know, underneath the rafters, as it is the case with most stadiums. So, you know, the facilities that I did see, they're all in very good shape. I spoke to all the different hosts. They had a big media event on our last day there, where the different host cities were presenting. And I think they're all going to be finished. It's not going to be like in Brazil, where, you know, you have the first day of the games and what was it, Corinthians Arena. Basically, 2,000 seats had to be closed because the stadium wasn't actually finished. This is not going to happen in Russia. I think all the stadiums are going to be done. The Krestovsky is a bit of a bad example because that stadium has been a mess from day one. Construction has been ongoing for almost 10 years and pretty much has finished now. And so that's a bit of a crazy example, I guess. I was at the Lushniki Stadium, which is going to be the host for the opening and the home games at the World Cup. It looks pretty much finished. So that's, you know, that was one where they were really questioning it because they had to basically gut it and build the stadium inside the stadium, which is very difficult. And it looks very much done. The facilities around it look done. The train station that connects it is done. A lot of the infrastructure is done. At the same time, a lot of Moscow is a construction zone still. And I think they will finish it all, but it looks like that's going to be done. So I think they're going to be ready. And I actually think that it is going to be, they're going to do a very good job hosting it. The Confederations Cup had its hiccups, like the Confederations Cup always does. And every country that has hosted it, including Germany, had hiccups.
That's what it's for, isn't it?
But I actually thought that they did a very good job. You know, it wasn't like it was in Sochi where we had the Sochi fails. It wasn't anything unexpected. So I reckon that they're going to really do a magnificent job, and it's going to be definitely less of a disaster than the two previous World Cups in Brazil and South Africa in regards of organization. I'm not saying those tournaments ended up being disasters, but in regards of organization.
Sure. And I think the British media especially was certainly full of about how, well, certainly with South Africa and Brazil, about how the stadiums weren't going to be ready and how everything was going to be a fiasco. We haven't really heard too much of that. It's been more sort of centered on certain stadia and about issues with politics behind the construction of it as well. Actually, the last time I saw the stadium at Kazan, it had a swimming pool in it.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, they had the World Championship swimming there.
So they moved a swimming pool in?
They had a swimming pool in the stadium, yeah.
Wow.
It's a multi-purpose facility in the true sense of the word. It's a really great stadium. I had a couple issues with the way you get to and from the stadium. Kazan is one of my favorite cities in Russia. you know, for those who haven't listened to the Football Grab podcast, I've been traveling to Russia now for 14 years, so half my life. And I really love Kazan. It's a really great city. It's a very diverse city. You know, it's half Muslim, half Orthodox. There's a large Jewish population there as well, and it's a very, it works. You know, despite its diversity, it's a very peaceful working city and a really great place to visit. But they only have one metro line, a newly constructed metro line, but the stop is 2.5 kilometers away, I believe, from the actual stadium. And then they have a 2-kilometer security cordon around stadiums in Kazan, or around the stadium in Kazan for security purposes. So it was a bit difficult to get to and from the facility, which I think that is something that they will have to address. But the city and the stadium itself is absolutely fantastic.
There was obviously a bombing in Moscow not so long ago. Security is going to be very tight for the greatest show on earth. How do you think Russia are going to deal with that?
Yeah, security is, that was a topic with all the journalists that were there, because entering a stadium was more or less like getting into the green zone in Baghdad. The security was tight, really tight. You know, the security cordons around stadiums are usually 1 kilometer, and Kazan it was 2. So you had to actually, as a member of the press, because you're allowed to bring in a backpack and a camera, etc., right? You basically go through something that is like airport security screening. Now, it's not quite as harsh for fans, but fans won't be allowed to bring in any items. So they have to, if they want to bring anything there, they have to put it in a plastic bag, a see-through plastic bag. So security is very tight, and the security cordons around stadiums was quite wide. And this was for the Confederations Cup. I expect it's going to be the same for the World Cup. So I think in terms of security, Russia is ready, because Russia isn't Western democracy. It is a democracy in the sense that people vote and Putin gets the approval ratings to always win. I have to stress this. He does, you know, if there was an open election, he would still win, right? This is something that we have to remember. But it is not a Western-style democracy. Yeah. If they want to put security measures in place and make sure that certain people don't become a threat, then they won't become a threat. That's because that's the way Russia operates. So I think security-wise, they're going to probably handle it a lot better than any other country.
Do you see the same for outside of the stadium, like in the cities themselves? Because obviously that was an issue in France.
Yeah.
I think that's same. I think that Russia is going to handle that. You speaking about the hooligan issue, right?
Yeah.
That was not an issue at all at the Confederations Cup, and I definitely don't expect it will be an issue at the World Cup, because Russia knows who these people were. The security personnel knows who these people were. I know that before the Confederations Cup, these people got a visit, and they got 2 options: to either behave or to go away for 3 weeks. And this is the difference between an open Western democracy in a place like Russia. No, I'm not saying that's good, but you know, they are able to handle certain things in a way that we can't do in places like Germany, Britain, France, etc. So they made sure that the elements that could be problematic will not be a problem, and it's going to be the same ahead of the World Cup. Now, I was in Brazil for the World Cup in Brazil, and it was exactly the same. You know, there was they had the demonstrations in 2013. There was almost no demonstrations in 2014 because the military police went around and basically told the protesters, well, yeah, you have 2 options. We'll give you terrorism charges and lock you away for 2 weeks, or you stay quiet, right? So that's not necessarily a positive thing, but in terms of security in Russia, I think that means that that's not going to be an issue either.
Some of the taxi drivers, I think, in Moscow tend to be quite entrepreneurial when it comes to tourist rates.
Right.
There was a visitor during the Confed Cup. Basically, he was charged from going to the airport to the city centre something like the equivalent of £650 for a £20 journey. And when he complained to the authorities, they paid the taxi driver a visit, who paid him back in full and then spent the next 2 weeks giving him a guided tour around the city. So that's
customer service.
That
for you,
is good
isn't
customer
it?
Service, and that's an enforcement of good customer service, I think.
Yeah, it was a poor Chilean journalist who fell on the trap. He had to pay 50,000 rubles for taxi fares. So my suggestion is stay away from taxis, the open cabs. They have Yandex and Uber in Moscow and in St. Petersburg, and that's the only way I would order taxis there. So that's an app you can download. both apps are available in English. Yandex is very good. It's a Russian company. So if you go there as a fan, get that and only use that because the fare is predetermined.
Obviously, all the stadia are going to be about as spread out as they were in Brazil. They're all in the western half of Russia, aren't they, at least?
Yeah, the furthest east is Yekaterinburg, which is on the... It's in the Ural Mountains, right. And so the border to Asia, and that's the furthest east. And then the furthest west is Kaliningrad, which is, of course, the enclave located between Poland and the Baltic states. So that, there is a bit of a spread. There's a bit of travel, but train travel for fans is going to be free. And that was the same at the Confederations Cup. So you can actually take the train everywhere in Russia, and if you have tickets for the World Cup, you're going to be able to travel for free.
It's quite the journey, though, isn't it? East to west. I think even from north to south. I think from Sochi to St. Petersburg, it's 48 hours on the train. That's quite
You will have to be flying. That's what I did when I got around. It was mostly flying. And with the exception, of course, between St. Petersburg and Moscow, there's a high-speed train that gets you there in 4 hours. So, you know, that's faster than even flying because with check-in, etc., that takes time. And the train goes downtown to downtown. But yeah, you'll be spending some time in planes.
Well, let's have a talk now about the actual Russian national team, because obviously they haven't played, well, they played in the Confederations Cup, only got one win out of three. This is on the back of the Euros in 2016, only managing 1 point, and that was against England. So that's very poor. How is the general feeling about the Russian national team at the moment? Is there any positivity at all?
No, I really isn't. And that's it's really funny because I watched the final game against the Mexico, the one that they had to win. And yeah. I watched it in a bar with a whole bunch of Russian friends. And they weren't even disappointed when they went out. It was sort of shrugged their shoulders and like, well, we expected this. The team isn't strong. And I don't expect they will be strong enough next year to mount a title challenge. I think they'd be lucky if they get out of the group. And that sounds harsh, but it's the reality. I think maybe what will help them a little bit is that the group stage, the World Cup, tends to be weaker than at the Confederations Cup because, you know, they had Mexico, Portugal, and then, of course, New Zealand would they beat expectedly. But, you know, Mexico and Portugal, they have two very decent sides. I mean, we're talking the European champion here and we're talking Mexico, which is a very, very good national team as well. So I don't think people expected to beat those two teams to first or second place. At the World Cup, you tend to get a strong European team, right? And then two weaker sides. So I think that they will make it out of the group stage and maybe with a little bit of luck, quarterfinal. That's really the most I expect from that side. There is some good young players coming through, but it's just not enough to offset it, the balance. You know, there's a lot of older players in that side that have reached the Senate or above that. And I just don't think that there's enough time, you know, less than a year to put the reforms in place to have to sign a team that can really challenge for the title. It's just, I can't see it happening. And Russians know that. They're realistic enough to know that. They're informed about football. They watch football from different leagues. They know about Germany. They know about all these other countries. And of course, they now saw Germany basically play at the Confederations Cup with their B side and win the tournament, right? They're realistic enough to understand that it's just not going to happen for them.
What do you think is the root cause of this? Because you look at the Russian league and it looks a relatively strong one. I mean, they're reasonably high up in the UEFA coefficient anyway. Is it down to the fact of too many foreign players in the league, or the fact that the Russian players tend to play within Russia? They don't go and spread out and play in other parts of the world?
I think it's actually down to that. The big problem is not the lack of talent. There has been plenty of talent. I mean, someone like Alexander Kokorin is a fantastic player, a fantastic talent, or Alan Zagoev, but these guys don't go abroad. And one of the reasons is this is something that I have lamented for a long time, is the foreign limitation rule. The fact that they are only allowed to field six foreigners at one time on the field. And I know people will say like, well, wait, that limitation should actually mean that there's more good Russian players, right? Yeah. But it actually means that they don't get challenged. And it also means because there isn't the Russian players that are around and are really talented, they get gobbled up by the three or four big sides in that league. So CSKA, Spartak, Zenit, Lokomotiv. They swallow up all the biggest talent. Rubin Kazan is another one. So they pay premium prices. It's similar to what's happening in England.
Yeah.
The fact that you have very limited amount of English talented players, and the talented players that you have get basically paid extreme high wages because, you know, every squad has to register a certain amount of homegrown players for Champions League. So you have that same phenomena in Russia. So you have someone like Alexander Kokorin, who makes 4.5 million euros a year playing for Zenit and only paying 13% taxes, because that's what the tax rate is like for football players in Russia, because they're considered artists and artists only pay 13% tax.
Lovely.
So, you know,
what a nice gig.
So, yeah, it is a nice gig, but it means that there's no motivation to go abroad.
Of course.
You know, and the Russian league is a good league. It's a top five league in Europe, but it's not the league. It's not Germany, Spain, or England,
mm-hmm.
right? But teams in Germany, Spain, or England will not pay 4.5 million euros or 4 million euros after tax to a player like Alexander Kokorin. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, there is no motivation for someone like that to go abroad and really test their skills. So at the Confederation Cup, all the players were from playing in Russia. So, you know, that is a real big issue. I find that the foreign limitation rule is actually doing a reverse effect almost, you know, because the players know that they're going to get their playing time in Russia. They know that they're going to, because of the foreign limitation rule, every club has to have a certain amount of Russian players in their squad. The top teams will then try to sign all the best Russian players, and they will pay a premium to do so. So it really doesn't help the league system at all. And the other thing is that coaches are very reluctant to blood young players. There's almost coaches in Russia have almost a fear to play younger players. And that's been quite a big issue, because the U17 side and the U19 side, the U17 side won the 2013 European Championship. And then the same side, the U19 side, reached the final in 2015, I believe. So there is young, talented players there, but they don't get the playing time needed.
Usually when teams host the tournament, they usually get a kinder draw. I don't know if that's on purpose, but it just seems to happen. And you would think that Russia can, as you say, get out of the group. But I find it really fascinating what you're saying about the fact that it's the foreign limitation rule that is actually holding them back, because I know a lot of people over here in England have tried to call for the same thing, believing that it would strengthen the national side because it would bring more young players through. But from what you say as well, it doesn't even bring the young players through. All it does is it makes the big clubs hoover up all the talent, and the young players end up playing for the teams that get beaten every week.
Yeah, pretty much. I always say, you know, when I talk to my Russian friends about this, the two countries that have dominated world football over the last 10 years are Germany and Spain on the national team stage, right?
Yeah.
Neither one of those countries have foreign limitation rules.
Yeah.
That's just that is, if you want a big sample size of how to do it, that's how it is. So these countries, they have understood that it is more economical feasible for them to produce young players, because they can sell them, but also it's just cheaper than bringing in foreigners. But it's also just, you know, it's a rate of success, and there is the infrastructure there. So when Russian teams are saying, well, we have to put in this limitation rule, it doesn't go to the root cause of coaching at youth level. It doesn't address academies. It doesn't address, you know, the infrastructure. It doesn't address grassroots football. You know, I lived in the United Kingdom. The grassroots football is a lot weaker there than it is in places like Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, right? That's just one of the big issues. So if you don't tackle that, you can put in all these infrastructure things on the top, but if it doesn't sit on a strong foundation, it's just not going to work. And Russia is a good example for that.
What are the positive signs for Russia? What do you think are the things that you see within the domestic game or within the structure of the national team that makes you think, actually, this is one area that they are doing well in?
Well, the league has just, you know, I think they're now ranked fifth in the UEFA coefficient standings, which means they're going to have an extra Champions League spot starting next season. So that's encouraging. So you're going to have two teams going directly to the group stage and a third playing in the, I think it's the third round with the UEFA Champions League qualification or the UEFA Champions League reform coming in. You know, the big three sides are going to have, the big three leagues having four teams directly to the group stage, which means that the other leagues have to start qualification early. But that's still encouraging because I reckon that the third place Russian team has a good chance to go through and reach the group stage regardless. So that's already going to be a big step forward to them. It's probably coming too late for the World Cup to make an impact, but it will be helping them going forward. I also think that the new facilities will actually help. We covered the derby between Spartak and Zenit, the derby of the Russian capitals, as they call it in Russia. And the Krestovsky Stadium was full for that game. So, you know, 68,000 for a Russian league game is sizable and it's magnificent. So I think that the facilities will bring in quite a lot of enthusiasm. So I can see that helping. I can also see the World Cup helping younger players to maybe get through more easily because more young players will start playing. And I think the advent of the World Cup coming up has already caused a lot of clubs sort of looking at young Russian talent to bring him in. Again, I think it's too late. But I think, you know, just the understanding that this is what needs to be done will help them long term. And I think another thing is the economic issues in Russia because of the world situation means that some of the smaller clubs don't have as much money as they used to, which of course means that, you know, some of them are going bankrupt, but it also means that a lot of them are now playing more younger Russian players, which is, I think, is going to help them. And then there is some encouraging signs. There's a young keeper, Anton Matrushkin, who has gone to Switzerland to play there. And he looks like a very good keeper. He has been targeted by Bundesliga teams already. And I think, you know, if he does well, I think he could, that could lead to more young Russian players who have recognized that they don't get the playing time that they need at home to go abroad and try out there instead. So I think there is some signs coming that the game is improving. I just don't think it's in time for a good World Cup performance.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to start rounding this conversation up now because we've already packed a lot of information. We've rinsed him from information.
We have, yeah.
It's brilliant, isn't it? but what I now want to do is just take it to a personal level. What are you looking forward to with the World Cup next summer?
What do I look forward to with the World Cup next summer? Well, I'm, you know, excited to go there. We're going to be mostly based out of Moscow and we're trying to actually take a team there. So I'm looking forward to cover as many games as possible and to travel around a bit on the country and see a couple of the cities that I haven't been to. Places like Yekaterinburg, for example, or Rostov is another place I'm curious about, Saransk. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing those stadium complete, and I'm really looking forward to just travel around the country a bit and to experience some sights that I haven't seen before.
And who do you think is going to win?
I think Germany's going to defend the title.
Yeah.
I think, and I, of course I'm biased, I am German, but I think, you know, I was very impressed at the Confederation Cup with how Joachim Löw took that tournament and decided that, you know, I'm going to play some of the younger prospects and I'm going to experiment with tactical formations that we have never used before. And then the side basically goes and wins the entire thing. And I think that shows you strength of depth, which you need in a tournament like that, right? You need to be able to switch around formations. You need to be able to surprise your opponent. You need to be able to have players that you can bring in and out. And Germany has that. And I can't see that with any other country in the world right now.
No.
That strength of depth that you really need, right? So a couple, three or four injuries to key players will not face them. I think that will not be an issue for them. And I think that's what you need. A World Cup is always, of course, difficult. You have one bad game, you're out.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, looking at, when I look around the world and I look at all the sides that I have seen, and when you look at the fact that Germany basically took two B teams to two tournaments this summer and won them both, that's impressive. And I think it's hard to look beyond them when it comes to the title.
Not even Uzbekistan?
They have to get there first. But
they're very close.
They are close. And they would be the first Dan to reach a World Cup. So fingers crossed.
Well, thank you very much, Manny. I think you should tell the listeners where they can listen to you on a regular basis.
Yeah, of course. You can, as I said in the beginning, we have the Football Grad Network. We are on Acast, and we have the Gegenpressing podcast with everything about German football. Football Grad discuss a lot of the issues that we discussed today. And then Golazo, which is our fun little Liga MX, if you're into Mexican football, podcast. So yeah, that's where people can find me if they want to listen to me. And then of course, footballgrad.com is where we have all our articles. And then at footballgradlive is where you can find us on Twitter.
Well, I'm sure, actually, given the information you've been giving us today, I'm sure you'll be very busy between, well, next January and pretty much August, I think.
Yes.
So, thanks for fitting us in here, and thanks for coming on the show. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, real treat. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I think that's probably all we've got time for this week. Just before we go, though, we just got to remind you to, if you haven't yet, then, of course, we do this every week, tell you to sign up for our newsletter, the Weekend Box Set, which tells you all about the seven key games that are coming up this weekend on telly. I'm doing it again this week. And I think we start off, actually, Manny, you'll know this, it's Bayern versus Leverkusen, isn't it? Does the Bundesliga kick off, doesn't it, on Friday night?
Friday, it's back, thankfully. Real football is back.
Yeah, lazy Germans starting a week late, they say.
Yes. Well, we had the cup this week.
Oh, right. Oh, of course, yes. Yeah, so do you think Bayern obviously going to steamroller Leverkusen in their first weekend?
Well, we actually expect over on the Football Grad Network, we had Chris Williams and I. Chris Williams and I, we cover the Bundesliga. We actually expect that they won't win the title this year.
Ooh. Well, there you go. That's
put my head out of the window here and neck on the line. But yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I don't think Terry would be saying that. He'd probably just go, oh, they'll win it again, like they always do. But I think that would actually be a good thing for the
Absolutely.
Bundesliga. Certainly, really, wouldn't Definitely. It? I mean, it's obviously, if you're a Bayern fan, then you're quite liking winning every year. But
I know you're trying to wrap up, but I'd really love to hear who you think who's going to win the Bundesliga. Leipzig?
Well, Chris and I believe it could be Dortmund.
Right.
But and I love, this is a very controversial one. We actually just before I got on the show, we did the big Bundesliga preview on Gegenpressing, and I said Leverkusen.
Wow.
And that's because they don't have European football.
Yeah.
I think that's going to really help
Chelsea
them.
Chelsea last year.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, they have only lost Chicharito, but they won't need him because they don't have that many games, and they kept all their young talent. You know, we all expected that they would lose Havertz, Brandt, Bellarabi, and all these guys would be gone, but they were able to hang on to them. And I think that not playing in Europe is going to be a massive advantage for them.
Okay. Well then, yes, as I said, sign up to the newsletter. That's tinyletter.com/soundoffootball, or you can go to SOF Podcast and you can click on any of the links I've put up there. I put loads of links on there to go to the newsletter. But for now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Manu Vett, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Not bad at all.